Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his home. Sweet song, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy, what if I be blue, now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
So they were looking posh, but we were looking sloppy. Welcome to Charlton Live. Good evening to you and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. It's Sunday evening. We're going to look back at yesterday's, unfortunately, a defeat at home to Peterborough United by 2-0. I'm your host for this evening, Louis Mendes. Joining me in the studio here at the Valley, the First Lady, Charlton Athletic. How are you doing, Sue?
I'm good, thanks, Louis.
Yeah, enjoying the Christmas party going on outside?
Yeah, they're getting a bit lively.
Yeah, there's
a... I can't tell them to be quiet.
At some point, you may or may not hear some children running around and throwing stuff at the window, but they seem to be having a good time out
currently
there.
Currently playing football.
So currently playing football?
Transfer window.
Yeah, can't get in the team. Right, oh, the other voice you can hear there, Tom Wayne, how you doing? Tom, looking resplendent in your Christmas jumper.
I came out, I forgot I was wearing it, and then it was too late to go home and change. Never mind.
I think it adds to the festive cheer here on Charlton Live. So on tonight's show, of course, we're going to look back at yesterday's pretty frustrating day against Peterborough United here, a 2-0. Defeat, we lost. I'm going to hear from exclusively from Carl Robertson, the Addicts manager. Also going to hear from Andrew Croft, the midfielder. Some quotes from Ronan have popped up on some sort of Belgian TV or something or other today, so we're going to try and decipher those. I'm still getting the details in from those as the children outside start to raise their voices just as the show starts. So we'll talk about those quotes, talk about the transfer windows coming up. Also, Christmas is coming up. This isn't our last show before Christmas because we're back on Thursday, but because it's our last Sunday show before Christmas, we want to know, we did this feature last year as well, I want to see if anything's changed, what you guys want Santa Claus Jensen to give you from his bulging sacks. Santa Claus is going to be coming down your chimney on Christmas Eve, so what can he give you, a Charlton-related Christmas gift that you want from our good friend Santa Claus? And of course, before the end of the show, there's the small matter of the South London Derby that we're going to lose on Wednesday that we need to look forward to. So we'll do that as well. But right, first things first, I think, listen back to the highlights of yesterday's game. Not a classic, and this is how it sounded.
In a lively play this first half, Paul Taylor. Everywhere for Peterborough, it'll be him to take a free kick, right footed delivery, chips it in into a good position, it's been a header and there's a goal!
Too easy.
I can't see who scored it, but Peterborough
I think it's
have taken the lead. I think you're right, Ryan.
I think I can't.
Tafazzoli.
Tafazzoli's whirled away. He just made a late run, got there first, and it's one of those in-swinging crosses that come in that are difficult to defend if they're aimed at the right height, and that one certainly was, and he got there first, and we didn't, and Dylan Phillips had no chance with that.
Phillips did get a touch onto it, but couldn't divert it over the bar. It's a lovely ball in from Taylor, poor defender from Charlton though. Ryan Tafazzoli gives his side the lead after 21 minutes. Charlton will have to come from behind.
And we'll find Taylor taking on Crofts. Little reverse ball, but it's cut out by Teixeira. Teixeira up to Crofts. Crofts trying to find McGuinness on the outside left, and he's done so. McGuinness will take on Boswick. Can he get past him? He can. Into the penalty area. McGuinness takes a shot off the post. Left-hand post. And Charlton's so close to getting the equaliser. Super work from McGuinness. Left Boswick for dead. But Peterborough now can bring it away in the centre circle. And comes away with the ball. Hint of a foul, but nothing given. That's good work from Bataka to wing it back for Charlton. Cuts infield. He's got Ulverstead away to his right, and so is Konza. It's Konza is picking this up. Far right-hand side now. Back inside to Ulverstead. Into space, Ulverstead. Will he take a shot? Thought about it. Instead, finds Konza again on the edge of the penalty area. Inside, chip across, drops to Ulverstead. Tries to take a shot, blocked. Back to Bataka. Central position. Now takes a shot off the crossbar. Lockman's in on there, but it's cleared away. And once again, Charlton denied by the woodwork. Taylor looking for the run of Nichols. He's poorly timed that run. He seems to think he did, but the assistant down here, pretty much everybody else in the ground, realised he'd run too soon. Free kick to Charlton, quickly taken to Bauer across to the right hand side, and Konza on halfway. Konza with Edwards in front of him has got Jose making the run. Jose back to Konza. Konza, heavy first touch, and that allowed the challenge to come in, and Moncur has picked it off. Moncur in the centre circle, goes left to Taylor takes on Konza and takes on Bauer, and he's gone past both. Sorry, that's Nichols Ryder. He's in the box, takes a shot, comfortable goal.
It's a lovely finish.
Edwards, I was right the first time.
Lovely finish, but he's got past them far too easily, Edwards. Little nutmeg, I think, on the final one was Bauer. And Phillips, for some reason, decided to stay on his line. He probably should have come out and closed them down quicker, but take nothing away from Edwards. That's a lovely goal.
Again, a goal of Charlton's making a little bit. Ball lost in midfield. Trying to take too much on. Crofts picks it up instead. And that is the final whistle in a game that's been completely frustrating from a Charlton point of view.
So we heard the highlights from CFC player HD, Terry Smith and Greg Stubley taking you through. That was a good one, wasn't it, Tom?
That was not a lot of fun, was it? It was one of the poorest performances I've seen down here, really. They just didn't look up for it at all. Mm. I think, was it Oldham we played on a Tuesday night, which was probably the worst of the season.
I'd say Oldham was worse for me. But
this was just, it just looked like a lack of effort. And I'm not going to say that was the case, because I like to think that the players put everything into it, but it didn't come across like that sitting in the stands.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the way the game started, I think 10 minutes maybe in the first half, 15 minutes at the start of the second half, where we had spells of possession. Sorry, there's some kid jumping out the window. and without really creating much in that first half. Twice we hit the woodwork in the second half, and no shots on target throughout the game. It simply wasn't good enough, and Carl Robinson came out and said that himself. But I don't understand why they were so disjointed. We played well up at Bradford last week. We had those spells at the start of each half. Why do you think Peterborough sort of dominated apart from that?
I think Peterborough dominating is a part of it, and we have to give credit to them, because they press so high and seem to just make our players nervous. I think our sort of youngsters were a bit more exposed because they are younger, and they came up against an experienced team and a team, as I say, that were just pressing so high and putting them under pressure, and that's where the mistakes came. Look at the sort of mistakes that individual players were making, just passing straight out into touch or just losing the ball so easily, and that's something that we don't see that often from Charlton players. And on Thursday's show, I said if we're on our game, there's no reason we should fear Peterborough, and we were just so far away from our game, and it was a fairly routine win for them, really.
Look at the concession of the goals was particularly disappointing. The first one coming after 21 minutes. Tafazzoli's header from the free kick. I mean, Carl Robinson said in his pre-match video, he talked about set pieces and he talked about the counter-attack. So that's the way they scored twice. I mean, set pieces in particular. I mean, it's considering our defence has been one of our strongest points, so do you think the fact that we've now mixed it up a bit because Pierce has gone off injured and Teixeira has come back in today, do you think that had an effect?
Maybe, but it's no excuse because that was still simple enough to defend. I'm surprised Phillips himself didn't come out and claim it. I thought it was close enough to him. But if not, we've got enough experience in that box to be able to clear that out. And nobody took control, and he basically had a free header just outside the six-yard box. And it was such a simple finish for him. Yeah. But yeah, obviously we have had to chop and change things at the back, but I don't think we can use that as an excuse, really.
Yeah, good evening to Marion, so she's listening, by the way. She said that she listened while she was wrapping presents yesterday, and the game sounded awful. Now, start of the second half, whatever Carl said at half-time seemed to work for a little while, because we did come out a fair bit stronger. We saw McGuinness hitting the post, and we saw Jose with a volley over the bar. We saw Botarka hitting the crossbar with a deflected shot. I mean, that's twice in two league games that we've hit the frame of the goal twice within the space of about 5 minutes. But, you know, there's a flash of what we could do there in that 15 minutes.
Mm. And that's what I mean about being on our game. And when we did, Peterborough couldn't cope with us at all. It was only 10 or 15 minutes, but they got nowhere near us. And, you know, it's one of those things where if you're an ultra-positive fan, you look at those two chances and you say they go in and that changes the game. But I think if you're being more realistic, creating those two or three chances in 15 minutes isn't good enough for a team that want to be pushing for those playoff places this season. So it was a reaction of sorts, and I said to somebody at half time I wouldn't want to be in that dressing room when they went off down the tunnel, because I should imagine Carl gave him a bit of a kick up the backside. But yeah, again, we did that for 10-15 minutes. We had a couple of chances, we didn't capitalise on them, and then they score their breakaway goal, and that killed any sort of momentum we'd built up.
Yeah, now that second goal was scored by Gion, I don't know if it was that, so Edwards.
Guion.
No, that sounds possible. I was sort of halfway through typing a sentence because the ball was sort of in midfield, and then looked up, and all of a sudden it looked like Lionel Messi was playing for 30 seconds. I mean, I said that in the press conference yesterday, and then someone tweeted about 30 seconds later saying, I've just heard Gion Edwards compared to Lionel Messi in the Charlton press room. I was like, who's listening to me? you can praise the Peterborough player for his run with the ball and his tenaciousness, but he got through some pretty soft challenges when we're trying to defend that one.
Yeah, again, I think on the whole, full credit to Peterborough, because they pressed high and they worked hard and they were just generally better than us. But in that occasion, he didn't really have to work that hard to get through there. And it was around the halfway line he picked the ball up, and there were four or five players that he just went past without any bother. The challenges, like you say, were half-hearted, and it was a good finish at the end of it, but we've got to be doing better than that again. And Robinson surely isn't going to let them get away with that anymore, especially with such a big game coming up Wednesday. And one of my worries, and I think I said it on Thursday, was perhaps people are going to be protecting themselves a bit for Wednesday, but those players were so bad on Saturday that arguably they've played themselves out of the team for Wednesday night.
Mm. So, the way they reacted to that, I mean, there was a bit more possession a little bit after the... After the second goal, but after that, no real clear-cut chances, apart from that corner that got nodded down towards the Jose, where he couldn't sort his feet out in time to turn it towards goal. Apart from that, we didn't really create much after it either.
Yeah, and as you say, no shots on target. We've hit the post a couple of times. We've had a couple of longer-range efforts that have gone over or wide, but that's really about it. And you look, I mean, I don't really want to pick out individuals yesterday because I thought it was poor all round, but you look at someone like Ademola Lookman and you see when he has a bad game how much that affects the side, because especially with our injuries at the moment, we're so reliant on one or two key players that when they don't show up, and especially for someone so young, that is going to happen every now and again, we just haven't really got any sort of attacking threat.
Mm. Now, Andrew Buckland said yesterday was unsurprising, uninspiring and predictable. Lisbon's asked, some wise for the show, why is Croft's captain? Why is he even in the team? Why does Carl Robinson even rate him? Why was there no Carl Robinson animation in the second half? So did you think he'd been a bit calmer in the second half, didn't he?
A little bit. I don't know whether perhaps he saw that the game had gone as well. I think, again, I don't want to pick up particularly on individuals because I don't think anyone covered themselves in glory, but Croft didn't have a good game, to be honest. But then there's been other games this season where I think he's been all right. He's not, you know, he's not a world-class midfielder. He's not going to be up there for player of the year, I don't think. But, you know, he's working hard in the middle. And captain, it was a strange decision, I guess, because of his experience, you know. And if the players perhaps that are more Charlton, if you like. For example, Morgan Fox, I think particularly given his performance yesterday, you don't necessarily want to put more pressure on someone like him. So I understand logically why you might give it. But again, his cross performance was just in keeping with everybody else, really.
Mm. Susie says that my first home game of the season and my last until Roland sells. I'm passionate, non-passing, unmotivated players. It was an utter disgrace. How much of an excuse do you think you can take from the fact that we are missing Rad Holmes, you know, players like that, Solly, that sort of thing?
Again, I don't think I think with something like yesterday, it's not an excuse, because it seemed like it was a lack of effort that cost us yesterday. But I think we do have to take that into account. There are a lot of players missing, and that's going to hurt any team. But again, if that's the case, then that comes back down to the thinness of the squad, which comes all the way from the top, and it's the same problem that we've had for the last 3 years. So again, that, you know, you can't blame Carl Robinson for that. It's all a manner of things, isn't it? When we win, it's easy to just talk about the victory and talk about the positives. But when we lose, the fact is that all of the reasons that that's happening seem to come back to the same old problems which have existed for 3 years. And while the protests go up and down and the discontent amongst fans and the relationship with the fans and the owner sometimes go up and down and go a bit quiet when we're doing okay, problem is that when we start losing, it's due to those same problems.
This one's for you, although I'll let you come in as well, Sue, because you would have seen him play on other days.
Mm-hmm.
John Pitchers, Tom, says, send Olmstead back to Burnley's hopeless. We're dreaming if we think he is the calibre of player to get us back to the championship. Because he's a player that I think has been pretty decent at times this season. Maybe not yesterday. No one was yesterday. I mean, I know you love him, Tom.
Yeah, but I'm not going to defend his performance yesterday either. He wasn't good. But I think, and again, it depends. If you're comparing him to the creative midfielders we've had in previous seasons, again, I'd argue he's not as good, admittedly. But the reality is that these are the sort of players we're bringing in now, and I think compared to the rest of the squad, he's pretty good, and he's someone I enjoy coming down to watch, because I think he's got that little bit of class on the ball. He seems to have a couple more seconds on the ball than anybody else. He sort of slows the game down and picks out a key pass. So I think he's got a lot of talent. Again, he didn't play well yesterday, and I would agree with a lot of people when people suggest that the squad is not as good as it has been in previous years. But again, that's not his fault. He's come here to do a job, and on the whole, I think he's done it well since he's come to the club.
What have you made of Olves so far, Sue?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's from what I've obviously he's just pointed out, I wasn't here yesterday. Well, I wasn't here for the match. I worked, and then I went home.
You came for the pre-match, then you went home. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had a Christmas day to go to. So
did after squad go with you by any chance?
No, might have helped if they did.
Yeah.
But I, on the whole, I really like Freddie. I think that he's inconsistent. How old is he? Is he quite?
He's about. I think he's about 24.
No, his face is about 12.
He looks so young, and I kind of, at times, some of his decision making, I've kind of questioned a little bit. But I guess I don't know how regularly he was playing at Burnley.
Not very regularly.
So again, I think he's one of them players that's going to grow into a really great player. And I think the difficulty is because we have had a fairly inconsistent starting lineup, I think that's showing in some of the performances. And when you are missing people like, although he's quiet, people like Solly, who control so much in a game, I think some of the younger players are sort of probably struggling a little bit where they haven't got that so much guidance. I think Crofts, I think that's probably why Crofts has been picked as captain, because he's one of the older, sort of wiser heads. He's calm, and he's good for guiding the young players. But I'm not questioning him why he's picked as captain when you've got Jacko, who's, I think he's hamstrings are playing up a little bit lately by the sounds of things.
So crying, it's
a baby
babies
crying. No, right, okay.
Yeah. Lewis Wheeler says, how is Olmstead getting picked out? Look who's next to him. Andrew Crofts, whose legs have clearly gone. He's decent on the ball, brings it forward and passes it well. Everything Crofts doesn't do. Arguably the best central midfielder we've got.
That's what I was about to say. If you pick out particularly Crofts and Olmstead, who else are we going to put in the middle? Like Sue says, you've got Jacko, who I think, if he's fit and he's able to last the 90 minutes, most of us would have him in most games. But aside from that, where else do you go in that central midfield? That's the problem. We haven't got the players like we used to have. We haven't got a Dale Stevens or Jordan Cousins that can go in there. This is who we've got. I think Alvestad's probably the best in terms of quality out of those central midfielders. Otherwise, you're chucking in someone like Joe Aribo, yet again, way too young, and you're going to burn these young players out.
Bob Liscombe says, yes, it was poor, and he's got nothing more to add to that. Now, how are you rating the new manager then? So we've had four games now, but somewhat bizarrely, when we were out for our Chocolate Life Christmas drinks in Greenwich on Friday evening, I was sat by the window, and who should walk past but Carl Robinson, along with Chris O'Loughlin. So I sort of shouted, oh, look, it's Carl, at which point Glove Pup chased him down the road towards the Cutty Sark, and said, Carl. But at that point, I was chatting with O'Loughlin, but you were there chatting with Carl. What sort of impression did you get from him there, for starters?
He does come across as a really nice bloke. I had reservations about him coming in. I didn't know him personally before he came here. There's just something about him that I just didn't like. I couldn't put my finger on it. But the way he's spoken since he's come into the club has been very good. He was great with us on Friday as well, gave us his time and talked to us as well. And it's a process, this new manager. And I think I said this on one of the shows recently, that with someone like him, he's got a philosophy that he wants to implement, and it takes time. He's not like a Redknapp or a Sherwood that comes in, gives them a kick up the backside and gets them firing, but he'll burn out after 10 games. This is going to be something that he needs gradual time to develop, and the problem is that coming to a club like us, you invariably don't get that time. Obviously, the first three or four games haven't been brilliant. He would have wanted a nice, comfortable win by now, but you say we played well at Bradford and they were unbeaten at home. He's played Milton Keynes in two of his games, which can't have been easy, and obviously doesn't excuse the loss, for example, on Tuesday night, but they're, you know, slightly different, out of the ordinary games. And then we've come up against a Peterborough side who are known for scoring goals and just outplayed us. So he needs time. We can't judge him yet. The way he talks, I like it, but sooner rather than later, the performances have got to mirror the way he's speaking about the club, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with Tom on a lot of that. And I mean, when Carl's name was being thrown into the hat after Russell had gone, me and Tom were pretty much the same mind, but we was only judging it on what we'd seen of him at MK. And sort of, he's one of these people, it's really easy for him to win you over, the way he speaks and the passion that he's got with the game. And I think, again, Tom's right in the adaption of the way that we're having to play now, where Russell was quite defensive, Carl seems to be much more attack minded and that's going to take some time for the players to feel comfortable in playing that way. And it's always going to leave you, if you're playing attacking football, it's going to leave you open to possibly conceding. And I think once the lads get their head round that way of playing, it'll come good.
Oh, fingers crossed. Right, let's. Mike Tyson said that he's bored of Robinson and cheeky chappy acts already. So right, let's have a listen to Carl Robinson. Came in to speak to Terry, give us this exclusive interview after yesterday's 2-0 defeat here against Peterborough.
Joined by Carl Robinson in the studio after Carl. What must be a massive disappointment this afternoon for you?
Yeah.
Is it today a case of, you look at the injuries we've had to what is already a fairly stretched squad, is it?
There's a lot of injuries, obviously. When you look at Jordan and Ezri and Addy today, the 120 minutes, obviously they never played in the week. And you could see that, it was very evident. And when we don't have the players to rotate, in some ways, we could only change four or five, but obviously we couldn't change them all. They're the complete rest all week. But let's not use excuses. Let's not use them. We weren't good enough.
And it was a goal 20 minutes in either half that killed us off, and a dead ball situation and a breakaway goal.
But I told you that before the game. That was a strength. I just said to him in there, don't think that we can use an excuse to mask that performance. It was atrocious in some ways. The first 15 minutes of the first half was excellent. The first 20, up to probably the goals in some ways, in both halves, we were the better team. And at 1-0, we hit the post, we hit the bar. And you think, God, they just lack that look. And it's hard. It's hard. It's hard for the fans. It's hard. Some of the performances weren't what people wanted to see. And we were way off. And they have to take that on the chin.
You've experienced some battling performances in your short term.
Yes,
already
very much so.
And sadly, that just wasn't there today for whatever.
No, no. I'm asking so much of them. Maybe that there's always going to be that drop off, but I'm not going to accept that as an excuse. So, if I do, I'm not the person for the football club, am I?
With the injuries we've got, obviously Declan falling down again
yesterday,
sadly, with Jason being a long-term absentee, does that make January critical in terms?
It does, yeah, it really does. It's listen, let's stop beating about in the bush. I don't care about January. These got a chance to prove themselves right. They can mope, they can soak, they can do what they swore. They can do what they want. There's a game on Wednesday. Not an ordinary game. That's not an ordinary game.
In some ways, it's that huge that anything that goes on before can be.
It's a battle. It's a battle. Men against men.
And a game that a lot of Charlton fans set a lot of stall by, the game against Millwall, especially in their backyard. It's a game that could win everybody a lot of brownie points, shall we say.
We're not after anything. Do you know what we want? To make people proud. We don't want anything. We want to make them happy. So, when we go to battle on Wednesday, every ounce of our performance will be for the people who support us. And there's no better way to be criticised and to roll your sleeves up and put your shoulders back and take it on the chin and walk through it. As hard as you want to hit me, I won't stop walking. I won't stop walking any slower, sorry, on Wednesday. I know what we have to do here. If it was ever clear, now it is. There's another side to me that people don't see. And I've got to be the man that is brave and stand up to certain situations, I'll do so. And today's a day to stand up and be counted. I have to take responsibility for performance, because of my team. I have to take responsibility for the negativity has to fall down on me, because I'm the manager. But equally, we turn ourselves around and we go again on Wednesday. Bigger, bolder, faster, stronger, more aggressive. It's not about the size of the physical presence of a man, it's what's inside him. The heart, the desire, the application, the attention to detail. They're things that no one sees. And they're the things that we're looking for, that we're going to need them. And we'll know what players have them. But you can't see facets of people's mentality or certain aspects of who they are. You can as a physical presence, but it's not about the physical presence on Wednesday. So how far are you willing to go in anything, in a tackle, in a press, in a shot, in a save? How far are you willing to go?
Well, Carl, appreciate you coming in.
Cheers, thank you.
Difficult time after the keeper. Thank you.
Cheers, thank you.
Cousins, lovely ball into the path of Goodmanson. Can he take his man on? He does. He's trying to be pulled back, but he's in the area. The ball across the Benekaine, and there's a goal. Charlton have the lead again. Super work, firstly from Henderson, and rolled it out to Cousins, who did a pinpoint pass into the path of Goodmanson. And instead of Goodmanson going on his own, a slide rule ball across the penalty area picked out Benekaine, who buried his chance, and Charlton are 2-1 up.
Charlton Live. So you heard the mascots from yesterday's game shouting as loud as they could into the microphone. I'm speaking to you now. They always come into the studio and have a little tour, part of the tour of the mascots. They heard from Carl Robinson there. Very honest after yesterday's defeat. Obviously not very happy with the way they played. I'd say him and Russell so far have both shown a good honest streak, and that's what you need. That's what you want really from a manager, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the past, I guess, I don't know if it got lost in translation, but some of the managers that we had before, you almost felt like they were making excuses for defeats. Whereas I think with Russell and now with Carl, like we've just said off air, it's weird when you listen to Carl talk like that, because it's depressing. Because you can hear how much it's hurting him, but at the same time, it's refreshing and it's again, like, exciting is probably not the right word, but it's just nice to have someone who genuinely cares and has got that sort of, he's really taken that loss to heart. Mm. And I think all the time, if people were giving that 110%, even in terms of the management and the backroom staff, you can't ask any more than that.
Yeah.
They can only prepare the players up until that kickoff and obviously the half-time bit. But then it's down to the players to put in what they've been told to do. So, I'm probably defending him in terms of yesterday. Obviously, I didn't see the game, but it just... I think the players have got to hold their hands up at times and say... he's not the sort of manager that you'd think would go into it in a sort of half-hearted way in terms of preparing the side for the team they're going to be playing. He's obviously put a lot of work into making sure we're set up right. And then once they've crossed that white line, it's down to them.
Mm. I think as someone who was here yesterday, I think that's exactly right. And you can't excuse the defending for that first goal, really, and you can't excuse the lack of tackles for that second goal and all the sloppy passes and individual mistakes. Maybe some of that comes out of him trying to get them to play a different style and try something slightly different, but I think a lot of it... I think right at the end of the game, or towards the end of the game, McGuinness got the ball, passed it straight out of play. Like, we know he's better than that. There's no way he would do that in any other game. So what was it yesterday that made him do that? Mm. And there were too many instances like that where individual players... How many times did Addy just run into players and give the ball away? Whereas usually you'd see him dance past one or two and then either rip a shot or lay it off. And that just kept happening. And as I say, I'm not going to pick out specific individuals because every single player did things like that throughout the game. And like Sue says, Robinson can't justify that. He puts the players out there. They should be able to do those basic things, and they just didn't do them.
Yeah, Lewis said, I also feel that Carl Robinson needs to get the balance right. We did look exposed and open many times when sending many players forward. It can't be easy, as you sort of said, Tom, for the players to go from such a defensive mindset or set up to go all guns blazing. And Daniel says that Robinson interview reminds me of Mike Bassett, Indian manager. And then Lewis said that Terry was left speechless after. He does give quite... I know, grandiose speeches. He really expresses himself, quite emotional speeches. There's someone on Twitter last night, I can't remember who it was, dubbed some of his press conference from yesterday over Land of Hope and Glory. And he looked like... but you could see how frustrated he was when he came out. When I asked him the first question yesterday, and I always ask a really open question just to see how the manager's feeling. I always say, some of your feelings up after that one, something like that. And he sort of took a deep breath and then looked at him and went... I could tell you the truth, and I'm actually feeling, or I could be, because, and two or three times he said, you know, I'm not going to tell you what I think because I've got to try and keep my cool here. And it was clearly riled up about that yesterday. Right, don't forget, on tonight's show we've got a couple of topics we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about in a little while, we're going to talk about some comments that have surfaced from Roland du Châtelet in the Belgian media today, so be prepared to react to that if you want to. Also, it's Christmas coming up, so we want to know what's going to you're going to get you want from Santa Claus Jensen. What Christmas present do you want, Charlton related, please? And of course, look ahead to Millwall as well. Let us know if anything you want from that. I'm sure a couple of the Christmas presents will involve wins at Millwall. But if we can keep them like realistic, please. So unicorns, something like that. Right. So let's get on to the emails. You haven't got your thing, have you? So I'm gonna sort that for you today. Right. So Chris Davins, the first one up, says Chris Davins. Good evening, Chris. Says It was like Russell had never gone away. It was a truly gutless, spineless performance from Charlton for the gathered few to endure at the Valley yesterday. No win in 4-1 goal scored for cheeky chappy Coles Reds. And after hearing good reports from the Bradford game of a brave new world, I went to the Valley full of Christmas cheer. Attack, 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 the Robinson mantra, entertainment, the name of Robinson's game, or so I was led to believe. Not a bit of it, complete and utter drivel was how I'd describe what was on offer. We deserve nothing, got nothing against a side... though bigged up by Carl, were very, very ordinary. Yes, we hit the woodwork twice, but that was the total of our 90 minutes lack of endeavour. Why Fox, who sadly was his useless best, started ahead of Chixon, I have no clue. Not nice to jeer him, I know, but can see where the fans were coming from. He needs to kick up the you-know-what to wake him up. Defensively terrible, offensively worse. He needs to be taken out of the starting 11 as of Wednesday. Yes, it's not Robinson's team, so he gets a bit of a free pass for now, but the cheeky chappy PR dream face of the regime seriously messed up yesterday. Though many have been drawn into his pre-match tactical interviews and want to be one of the lads' interviews, the talking is done on the pitch. That talking was non-existent yesterday. Injuries, yes, but that is no excuse for the rubbish served up on the pitch. And he said it was as bad as any Russell Slade performance. Did you think about that?
I can't argue with a lot of that, really. It was pretty gutless yesterday. I think, like I say, that attacking football that Carl wants definitely wasn't on show yesterday, but because we didn't have those shots on target. But then when you think about it, those counter-attacks, our players were high up the pitch, so part of it's getting there. And as I say, I think this change in philosophy is just going to take time, and we've got to give him time. But yesterday was just not good.
We so I think I said earlier on during the season, like, well, just after Carl got here, saying, yeah, it's all well and good talking, but obviously in 10 games game, if we're still just talking and not doing it on the pitch, yeah. Obviously. The other thing that Chris mentioned, of course, was something that I got for a fair bit of stick for on Twitter yesterday for daring to have an opinion on, was the Morgan Fox. Obviously, Morgan didn't have a good game yesterday. No one did. I don't think he stood out as the worst player, but he was in and amongst the many players who didn't play well. When his substitution was brought up towards the end for Brandon Hanlon, there was sarcastic cheering. And I sort of tweeted out just saying, you know, I'm not a fan of sarcastic cheering. I don't think it's worthwhile. Others disagreed with that. I mean, I've never been one for booing or sarcastically cheering. I understand that people want to do that. It's up to them. I've just never seen how in any way it would help.
Yeah, I'm completely the same. I think that you pay your money, you come here. If you want to boo, you boo. If you want to hurl abuse at a player, you hurl abuse at a player. It's entirely up to you, but... with you when that happened, I didn't like to see it. I don't like to think that, you know, Fox hasn't gone out there and done it on purpose. He's had a bad game. I think he knows he's had a bad game. But, you know, he's going to have to go out there and play for us again sometime. And, you know, how's that going to help his confidence in terms of that next game that he has to go out and play? And I think probably, having looked at the last two or three games, particularly MK Dons on Tuesday night, where Chixon was arguably our best player, I was surprised that he didn't start.
Yeah.
But if Fox is put out there by the manager, then so be it. And, you know, yes, he struggled. The whole team struggled. But in my opinion, you shouldn't be doing that. We saw it with Mackinock last year, and look at him now. Now he's banging in goals
so
for Preston.
I'm so happy for him.
And,
I'm
yeah,
so
every
happy
time he scores,
him.
A little part of me sort of chuckles, but... You know, there were games here where he didn't impress either, but booing and sarcastically cheering players off, it's not something that I would agree with.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everyone knows my feelings on it because I've spoken about it in the past. And again, we used to have that discussion about if you was in your office doing your job and... You sort of messed something up and all your teammates started going, boo, get out, get off, whatever. What is that going to do for your confidence? Mm-hmm. Or how is that going to make you feel that you want to be there? The Valley can be such an intimidating place to opposition teams, but at the moment, it feels like sometimes it's being more intimidating to our own players.
We struggled
with that, and I don't know what it is. It's sometimes I think when Paley was in charge, we used to play better away from home because it's almost like that pressure is lifted off of the players from making that one wrong touch that then leads to the crowd to start getting on their backs.
I do wonder if you have that every time. I mean, there's plenty of clubs I've been to as well. I remember Rotherham the worst for it when. Went to Rotherham a couple of years ago, and I think it was a game we drew 1-1, and they get on their own players back. It probably is something that happens at every club.
But, I'm sure it does, yeah. And as I say, those people who choose to do it, that's entirely up to them. I'm not here to tell them that they can't do it, but it doesn't mean I have to agree with it, and I don't. So
yeah, there we go. Right, Alex Hall says, "Dear Charlton Live, I'm completely gutted by this weekend's result. I really thought we'd turn a corner with these types of performances. Surely Chixon has to start." He's put Chicken actually. We seem so much more solid when he plays. The Jose isn't just scoring, and Josh seems to hit the bar or post. I've never seen a striker hit the woodwork so often. I've read an £11 million deal has been agreed for Lookman. I think that was in the Daily Mail or something. We're reporting that. I never even bothered reading it, to be honest. I don't know. If the money is invested back in the team, we should take it. And that's a huge question. He doesn't look ready for a move to the Premier League with his last few performances. Hope we sell Fox. We were offered £2 million for him from Sheffield Wednesday in the last transfer window. He's a very overrated player. January couldn't come sooner enough for us. Hope we get some more passion and fight in our team as strikers who can score. I'm still believing that we can make the playoffs. So that's hoping. Like I said, talk about the investing the money back in. I mean, that might be pie in the sky thing, because we've seen money come into the club in terms of some players, but not the amount of money that's gone out at times. Maybe we haven't seen it all come back in at times for players, and especially if you're taking away a player. Admittedly, Lookman struggled a fair bit yesterday, but you know, if you're taking a player of that quality away, and then if you don't replace him, then that would be a huge miss.
Mm. I think with him as well, I think we discussed it a couple of weeks ago, that he hadn't seemed his self in probably the last sort of five weeks or so, and whether that's he's having his head turned or whatever it is. But again, at the risk of like repeating myself and sounding like a broken record, he's 18 years old. He's still growing, he's still learning, and the amount, to me, it just seems unbelievable that all of our hopes at the moment are pinned on an 18-year-old boy.
There we go. Mike Tyson says, Fox just isn't good enough for me. Simple as that. Marion says, I've never liked booing individual players. Some will always do it, though. Good evening to Stedders and to Glupuff. We're both listening this evening for the first time in a while. Thomas Bristow says, sarcasm alert. Was good to hear the place rocking with all of the fans who just wanted to get behind the team, particularly the moment they all got behind Morgan Fox by ironically cheering him off the pitch. If many of those in the ground are against the protest because they wrongly think that it affects our results, then how do they think trying to knock a player's already low confidence even further is getting behind the team? Every paying fan is entitled to an opinion, but those who did that need to have a word with themselves. I'm by no means Morgan Fox's biggest fan, far from it, but he is a mid-table League One quality player playing in a mid-table League One quality side. It's not his fault that the mismanagement at our club has led to him being played as regularly as he has for over the last year. So that's from Thomas Bristow. Sort of already mentioned that, really. Howard Wood says, hi, I've been to Charlton 9 times in 2015 and 16 and won away match at Gillingham. They've won once, which is the first game I saw against Hull. I first went as a boy in the 1950s when we lived in Welling. The display against Peterborough was heartbreaking, but I don't blame the players. There seemed no system, and booing a home player was appalling. The game at Gillingham was, I think, the worst game I've ever seen. Apparently Peterborough are good at free kicks. Why aren't we? Perhaps we should ask Thomas Dryson to watch a few videos of free kicks and pass the information to us. It's hardly rocket science. I shan't go again unless there is a drastic change of direction. I have an awful feeling we will have an Irish manager from the network at the end of the season. Having spoken to, let's say, bumping into Chris O'Loughlin and Carl Robinson out in Greenwich, he's got a very thick South African accent, actually. He's not really Irish, yeah. It's quite interesting. Steve Catley, we've got one from Colin about Millwall v Charlton, which we'll come on to in a bit later, because obviously we're going to talk about a lot about Charlton's game for Millwall in a bit. But Steve Catley says, fully appreciate he's still a kid and still learning, but have to put a bit of blame at Dylan Phillips' feet for both the goals yesterday. There was no way he was ever going to save a header from the edge of the six-yard box, and should have come with a big fist amongst the crowd with him coming and taking the ball, players and everything else in the way. The second, a great goal, saw him not come out quickly enough for me. Both one-on-ones away at MK saw him not come out beyond the 6 yard line. In the pre-match warm up yesterday, he was practicing a few like that with a goalkeeping coach who was just running from the edge of the box, and he was coming to his 6 yard line and stopping. Surely he should just keep going and narrow the angle right down. To be fair though, there were a lot worse out there, some a lot worse. Cheers for keeping the show going despite the general glumness. Have a good Christmas, guys. And you, Steve, thanks for that. What did you make of Phillips? I mean, I thought he's done pretty well since he came in. Do you think he's questions over the goals yesterday?
I think he's been great since he came in, and luckily so, because obviously Rudd's so good himself. Yesterday, like, I sit behind the goal, so obviously I'm not alongside, so I can't see exactly where that ball ended up, but from where I was surprised he hadn't come out and at least tried to, like, that person who emailed in, at least got a fist to it. The second goal, I don't think there was a lot he could do, really. He was a bit exposed, but that first one he maybe could have claimed, but what might worry him is that's arguably his worst performance since he's come into this run. And Rudd's, is he now fit or getting fit? So
yeah, I think he was due to play on Saturday, but then he tweaked something in training, slipping over in training on Friday.
It's going to be a big call, I think, on Wednesday night about who Robinson picks. You know, I like Phillips, and I think it, on the whole, he's been a good player for us. But yeah, he wasn't brilliant and just not commanding enough yesterday.
Bob says, why do we insist on Lookman taking all the free kicks and corners? Surely he's not the only one able to put a ball in. His slip at the end summed the day up for me. So you wouldn't have seen that, too. But basically, after a very disappointing performance, we had a free kick just into injury time, midway through their half, after a bit of a pushing and shoving between Chickson and one of their lot. And Lookman wound up to take the free kick and pump it into the box, slipped over, hit his standing foot, and it just rolled about 5 yards away, and Peter had another break just as the game was finishing. Yeah, his set-piece delivery had been pretty poor, to be fair. I didn't notice it as much yesterday, but I don't think we had as many chances to get the ball into the box after that.
Some of his corners yesterday were better.
Because I was puzzled. When he got put on corners, I was like, why? He's
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He's an attacking player. He should be in the area.
He's not tall.
He's only about 3 foot.
No, but he's got...
On the edge of the box,
if you get it coming out, he's someone that can get hold of it and have a shot. I don't understand why he's on him.
Right, let's hear from Andrew Crofts. Came in to speak to Terry in the press conference after yesterday's game. Talks a little bit obviously about yesterday's game, but looks ahead to the Millwall game as well. Says Andrew Cross after yesterday's 2-0 defeat.
Andrew, tough afternoon, difficult game to be part of, I'm sure.
Yeah, obviously, you know, we was building some momentum, and today's a real kick in the teeth, because after the Bradford game we was all like real full of spirits, and we played really well that day, and you could tell we had some good results, and then that coming in today, we really wanted to win today. And then up until the first goal, like the first 15-20, we started off all right, to be fair, and I was thinking, you know, this could be a good day. And then we gave a sloppy goal away, and then after that we were poor, to be fair. And then second half we come out, first 10, and had a go. It looked like we could have got back into it. Didn't get that equaliser, and then obviously they caught us on the counter attack. And then after that, it weren't great. But you know, we're delighted that we got a game on Wednesday. Massive game, and we got to put that to bed now. Think about Wednesday, because everyone knows how important that game is, and we're really, really looking forward to that now.
Is it as simple as looking at the two goals and the timing of the two goals after, as you said, a decent first 10 minutes in the first half, and the same again the second, where we hit the woodwork twice? Is it as simple, or can you put your finger on other things that just didn't seem to happen?
Yeah, it was like I said, it was carbon copy really. Like both halves, like I said, the first 10-15 and the first half, I thought we started with a good intent. We was pressing well, and we was playing well, and we was looking like we was going to threaten them. And then, obviously, like I said, the sloppy goal goes in. And then I think we needed to just stick to what we was doing and sort of not panic, because obviously, you know, when you go a goal down, it's still, it was like 70, 75 minutes to go. So there was plenty of time. And I think we just come away from what we was doing well. And then we all said that in the changing room. Just, you know, after that, we panicked a bit and stopped doing what we was doing well, and what we wanted to do and what we worked on all week. But we're learning from that. Like I said, we can't do nothing about it now. Again, first 10-15, the second half. Maybe if that goal goes in, unlucky to hit the post and so on and so forth. But it weren't to be. And then obviously they catch us on the counter attack, and then it's hard work from there. But yeah, we're bitterly disappointed, because we was building some momentum, but we used that disappointment to have a right good goal on Wednesday.
Is it You mentioned about the momentum, and we've been putting some good battling performances out of the last four, and certainly since Carl Robinson's come to the club. But then we're constantly getting injured. We already had Declan Rudd, we already had Ricky Andrew, we had Chris Solly, and then suddenly you've got Lee Novak on top of that, you've got Jason Pearce with a long-term injury. Does that affect the mentality of the squad as well?
They're obviously all big. The players they mentioned there are massive players for us. Of course, it has a effect as far as it can, because, like I said, they're massive players for us. Piercy was different gear up and obviously until his injury. And Noves is a big player. Souls is a massive player. He has been for years. Ricky Holmes was our driving force going forward and our creator and stuff. And obviously Deck was, he was brought here to be number one and he was doing great. And then, yeah, they're all big players. But at the same time, we got a decent squad. We had a decent team out there today. So no excuses on that side of it. Boys obviously had boys had 120 minutes on Tuesday, so that might have took its toll a little bit on a few, but this football, like I said, we're bitterly disappointed, but we got another game Wednesday, and like I said, we know how big it is, we got to get it right for that.
As an experienced man in the squad, obviously we've got some young kids in there, and Ezri at the back of the course as well, and we've got Wednesday coming up. I think everybody probably knows how important that is to the fans as well as the club. I mean, 3 points is of course vital, but the nature of where we're going and who we're playing. Will you be a big part in trying to G up the team to get them up for Wednesday?
Yeah, definitely. I love derby games. As a player, they're what you want to play in. And every fan that's going to that game is going to want us to give everything we got. I love talking to the young boys. Said that when I first come here, I've been really, really impressed with them. They're big, big players and with big, big bright futures. And yeah, there might be a few of them with a first taste of a massive derby, and they'd be needing that help. We're all together. We've got a real good group of lads, and like I said, we'll put it right next few days. Forget about today. I know it's tough too, because everyone cares about how we get on. I'm one of them that, you know, it's gone, but it still hurts. But like I said, you use that hurt in the right way, channel it in the right way, and we look forward to Wednesday.
I don't know if you're aware, but our record against Millwall isn't exactly up there to be proud of, to be crowing from. So the victories that do come are remembered, and are remembered for a long time. I wonder if the players would be aware if they get anything out of it, get a decent result on Wednesday, they could end up being legends here.
Yeah, no, I've heard it already. We're saying it straight away. I think it's 20, 21 years or whatever. So, yeah, if we're the team to do it, and obviously we play them again in Jan, but obviously Wednesday's massive. I want to be one of them players that is involved in the team that beat Millwall, of course, and I think everyone in that change room is exactly the same. And like I said, we got to channel that disappointment today, channel it in the right way and get up for Wednesday and give everything we got.
Charlton Live.
Hello?
From the home of time. Home of time. This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
Carol, a heavy defeat at Burnley today. How do you sum that one up?
We were good.
Charlton Live.
I'm back, Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Just hearing there from Andrew Cross on tonight's show. We're gonna in a few moments' time. We're gonna try and decipher some of the quotes that Roland supposedly gave to Belgian TV, which surfaced this afternoon. He's trying to get a couple of standout ones in there. I think he refers to protesters as stupid. So someone on the forum has translated that for us. I think it's from Dutch. So we'll try and work that one out. Also later on, it's Santa Claus Jensen is going to be coming down your chimney. No matter where you are in the world, soon, December the 25th coming up. So we're going to discuss what you want for Christmas from Santa Claus Jensen. Let us know, studio at charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. A couple more emails which we're going to go through in a few seconds' time. Roger Charles said, what on earth was that yesterday? So frustrating. Bradford was a million miles better from that performance. Get behind the boys, don't boo. Now Paul Glover tweeted me, Peterborough, right? So when Glove Pop come out on our Charlton Live drinks on Friday evening, And so we're sat there, staring out the window, and I just see Carl Robinson. I didn't even notice who the other person was until we went out. Like, Glupak chased him down, and I went, "Carl, Carl." And then Carl turned around, and Glupak apparently said, "Don't know what to say now." Something along those lines. But, so they had a chat. But then when I went out, and I noticed it was Chris O'Loughlin next to him. So while you guys were talking to Carl, so I've already spoken to Carl. I've never spoken to Chris O'Loughlin, so I thought it'd be interesting to speak to him. But Carl mentioned something along the lines of that where he was staying. In Greenwich is exactly where the Peterborough team stayed as well, and at which point Glovepup looked at Chris O'Loughlin and went, "Oh, are you from Peterborough, are you?" And I was like, "No, Glovepup ain't been paying attention to the news recently, has he?" Pedro says, "Pete here, back in Cornwall now," so he's back from Dubai. He says, "When we had that, when interim manager, things were going great guns. What happened? And how long were you gone for, Pedro?" we've got a couple more emails which I'll talk about. Bob Knight says, "I said at the start of Robinson's reign that you play the formation that suits your players. We have the worst central midfield in the division, so you need your wide men to help protect the back four. You cannot play without an out wingers. Nugent proved he knew the strength of his players with a more defensive setup. Carl needs to get his own players in before changing the formation." And that's interesting, isn't it? Because, like, say, Carl Robinson's known for having his own style of play, but you can only fit it around what you've got. And he talked about it yesterday. Some quotes in the press conference talking about how he likes to play with wing backs, but he does, or wingers as wing backs. He said he just doesn't have the right people to play with at the moment, and that's obviously frustrating him. That's obviously something he's going to try and address when he gets to January.
Yeah, and he's given that 4-4-2 a go, hasn't he, since he come in, because that's what we've been used to playing. It'll be very interesting what he does in January, I think, irrespective of whether we're pushing for those playoffs or not. And I think you can clearly see at the moment we're not. We have to go out and buy now, and hopefully Robinson can buy the sort of players that he wants and start to then use the second half of this season to shape a team in his image, get them playing the way he wants, get the formation he wants. And as I say, obviously we all want to go up at the first time of asking, but if that's not going to happen, then he has to be given time, because there's no point getting to the summer, at which point he's just created his team and then they get rid of him and bring someone else in and the whole process starts again. So yeah, January is massive for us, and you know, I don't know necessarily the names that we need, but hopefully Carl does, and if he brings in the right players, then the second half of the season could be good. So
yeah, well, we knew he was I think it was on Monday evening he was told that he was going up north to watch a game, and everyone assumed it was Bolton Gillingham, but I think I've been told it's not. It was a 23s game somewhere, so because I was hoping he was going Bolton Gillingham so we could buy that Bradley Dack, because I like him.
I think a lot of us were.
But it sounds like it wasn't that right. Philip Challis says, "Horrible performance yesterday. Like most people, I'm more than happy to give Carl Robinson some time, but we can't keep playing like we did yesterday. Fox is certainly finding things tough, but the way he has been picked out as a scapegoat seems harsh to me, as he at least seems to be trying but simply lacks quality. Compare him with someone like Ejose, who came to us with a big reputation but has been atrocious all season and worse, seems totally uninterested most of the time. He should be getting a lot more stick and Fox, in my view." I mean, what have you seen there, Jose? I mean, he missed a bit of a half chance when that header came down to him yesterday and had a volley over the crossbar as well. What have you made of Nicky so far?
I think it's difficult for Nicky. He's come with this big reputation, and I think we touched on it a few weeks ago when we said he's not one of these skillful goal scorers. He's not going to be scoring worldy goals. He's going to be getting on the end of like a little cheeky tapping.
No,
that
goal
that
he scored at Colchester in the Checker Trade.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. No one did. It was a cross he just tapped home, but yeah.
But he's a poacher. He's a goal poacher. And if you're not getting that service to get on the end of those, but strikers are confidence players. If they're not scoring, their heads go down. They look like they're not interested, but they are. They just don't know how to get themselves back into it. And I would never question his passion. He's just, I mean, he is a little bit more of a laid back bloke, but he wants to win, he wants to play, and I think he's probably finding it frustrating that he's probably questioning himself, where has my touch gone, sort of. It's hard when you see players like that you know are capable of so much better, clearly struggling.
I think what confused me yesterday is, and I agree with you, he is that kind of poacher-type striker, so you want him on the edge of the last defender so that when those crosses come in, he can pounce on them. And what confused me yesterday is he kept dropping short, or like when Lookman was out wide, he was often drifting out wide to help him out on the wing. And you think, is that a lack of confidence? Is he thinking, well, if I'm in the box and I miss my chance, that's going to be even worse, so I'll just stay out here and try and provide instead? And he didn't seem to be taking up the positions which, from my mind and from the highlights I've seen of him last season, were his natural ones, which were, like Sue says, edge of the 6-yard box, waiting for those crosses to come in. And instead he was kind of, I don't know touch wise, but I would think it, majority of his touches were well outside the penalty area, and that's not what you want from someone like him. You look at Tuesday night at MK Dons, his best chance came from bursting into the penalty area and taking a player on the edge of the 6-yard box. So that's what we need to see more of from him, and as I say, he didn't really do that yesterday.
Right, during the afternoon, my phone started going off with people tweeting me saying, I bet you've had to change your script for tonight's Charlton Live. And I was like, what on earth are they talking about? I've been at a Christmas sort of drink nibbles this afternoon.
I don't have a script, do I?
Do
you have a script?
Yeah, well, I say a script. Sometimes it's a post-it note. Today it's a Word document with 12 lines on it, headings.
Let's not let them behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Weeks of research going to each show.
Yeah, every single word I say is scripted. Even this, I wrote this conversation and pretended that we were just making it up, yeah. So I was like, what's going on now? So I got onto my phone and had a look. And so basically, Roland had given some quotes to some sort of Belgian TV channel. And there was some sort of video which appeared to have been taken down. But, I mean, the standout quotes where he sort of referred to the protesters as sort of some sort of idiot or something like that.
Stupid people.
Sorry, there we go. So that was a bit unbelievable. And then there's various quotes where he's talking about. You know, it's a lot of it's very similar stuff to what we heard when he was reacting to the Getting to Know the Network podcast, which came out a while ago, where he was implying that Chris Powell was getting 1 point a game. Jose Origo got 1.5 points a game over obviously much fewer games. Talks about all these so-called quality players he played that, as we said at that time, like those players just weren't playing. I mean, Reza played a bit and Astrid played a bit, but the rest of them weren't getting games under Riga. There were other quotes. He said he's talking about in terms of football ownership. He said I think I've done a reasonable job, but I'm also not planning on doing this forever. There was another one where he was talking about those emails that Jimmy Stone's podcast Getting to Know the Network discovered, where it seemed to be Roland through Thomas, if you look at the writing style, in my mind dries, and talking about how he said that our scouts knew them much better than the coach who was there, talking about our own players, like our own players who'd already been here, the ones that we're giving advice on. That sort of thing. Apparently he continued, if the coach could not understand that he was getting all these players, if the coach could not understand that he was getting help when he was getting all these players, then he is not a clever person. So he's calling Chris Powell now not a clever person. So obviously the other side of this we need to remember is that these are quotes that are being translated from someone, so we haven't verified them, but I think we've got pretty much the gist of it. I think it's Heather, I think, who was able to translate us. She speaks Dutch. So, I mean, what is your reaction to that? I mean, obviously it's playing with fire if you're going to go on Belgian TV and refer to Charlton fans as idiots, if that is the correct translation, and, you know, saying that Chris Powell's not a clever person when he's, you know, a very well-respected football manager. I mean, how do you react to that? For me, it's another PR question, isn't it?
I think if that's what's really said and that translation's correct, it's what's worrying is it's nothing really that we haven't heard before. But at the same time, the fact that we've heard it before and now he's saying it again shouldn't cover up just how appalling it is for an owner to come out and say something like that. For, you know, Chris Powell scouted those players for years and made sure that when he got those players in, they blew away League One and won it so comfortably, and you see the unity of that squad. And I think Card put out a video today of the day that we won that league and what the unity was like. So to then come in and say, oh, we knew those players far better than Powell did, how on earth can you say that? To say the scouts knew him better and to say these other players that he brought in and Powell ignoring them was wrong, well, Powell gave those players a chance at Wigan amongst other games and look how we got on. So it's like you say again, it's that feeling again that we're at war with our owner, and why would you come out and do it? You know they're going to get translated, you know they're going to get picked up in the English press, and as I say, it's nothing we haven't heard before, but it's just as equally shocking, and it's just so frustrating to hear yet again that he just doesn't get it.
It's a funny tweet I've just seen from Hungry Ted on Twitter. It says, calling protesters stupid, Roland, doesn't actually make me think any of less of you, because it's impossible for me to think less of you. So that's the thing.
How can you call someone stupid when you yourself have employed 8 managers in 3 years, overseen a relegation, overseen a 40% drop in season ticket sales? If you're the owner of a business and you've seen that decline in your revenue, that decline in your customer base, that decline in the success of your business, the sort of concerns amongst fans, the protests, all of that, none of that was here before he turned up. How can he then come out and call somebody else stupid when he's determined to press on and do all of this stuff? So it's just ridiculous.
Mm. Well, there we go. So yeah, any feelings on that? I mean, the one thing you have to think of is, in terms of public relations, it's something that obviously Charlton are trying to deal with now. They're getting new PR people in here. Adrian Bevington's coming in, Tom Rubbishow, I think, is coming in from Pitch. These people are coming in. They obviously need to worry about these things, but I guess there's not a great deal that they can do if Roland, who is the owner, is going to go out and start speaking to Belgian media. Now, Roland obviously thinks, he feels like what he's apparently saying here. He feels he's doing a good job. He feels that he was in the right and the Charlton fans and Chris Powell was in the wrong. But even if that is the case, if you are trying to win back this Charlton support, maybe that's probably best just to let it lie and not say anything.
I think that's the problem, is that I think some of us were kind of on another wave of positivity when Carl's come in. And I think, obviously, he owns the club, he can do what he wants to do, but it's sometimes you kind of think, just leave it. Like, things are kind of calming down a little bit at the minute. And now it's almost like this has stirred everything up. I mean, there are people that are going to say, well, nothing's changed. But I think that a few have kind of started to come round a little bit now. Cole's come in. And I think the problem is, for most people, the damage is done, and it doesn't matter what's said now. So whatever these new PR people come in and try and do and try and fix, I mean, I'm speaking from personal experience. My manager, Lisa, she's working tirelessly to build up these community links again. She's going into the school. She's getting a lot. Like, we've got this new thing where we're donating presents to local kids that are not going to get anything. She's really trying so hard. And it's difficult because you're batting against a wall now, because people are saying, oh, you are only doing that because you want to win people back. And it's always like people seeing it as an ulterior motive. This stuff has not come from Roland. This is individual departments saying, we want to do this to get people back. We want to do that to get people back. We want to make it back into that family club that we've always been so proud of.
Yeah.
And the difficulty is now, because we've got the face of Roland, people won't see all the other good stuff that is going on. Mm. Now, people will disagree with me and people will think that I'm wrong, but I work here on a match day and I do see people genuinely trying. I'm not saying the senior management team. I'm saying a lot of the staff are really trying to get that back, and now it's being seen as...
This is probably being undermined by these comments.
Well,
from
it
Roland,
is, completely.
And the thing is that the people, like Sue says, the people that are trying to win this club back are the fans or the people who've been here for a long time. People like these PR people coming in, I'm sure they're really good at their job and stuff, but that's putting a plaster over some... half a leg that's been chopped off. It's nothing. They're not going to be able to do anything. People who put these stories out now, if they know they've come back from those PR people, no one's going to care. And the problem is that Roland can't accept and won't admit that he mucked this club up. We weren't in a brilliant place under Powell at that point in that particular season, but he won't accept it. He's too stubborn to admit that he's mucked it up. And he has, on any way you look at it, he has, but he won't admit it.
I do want to respond to that, though, Tom, because, and again, I'm not defending him at all. Please don't misinterpret what I'm about to say. But before he took over, we were probably about 12 hours away from going out of business. Mm.
I knew there was a lack of money. I mean, anyone who listens to
Jimmy's
podcast,
I was working here. I was helping out with stuff, and I can remember one day getting a phone call from our cleaning company saying, if you don't pay this bill now, we're coming down and we're taking... And people will laugh at this. They will take all of the toilet rolls
yeah.
out of the whole ground. That is how bad it got. Like, now, it sounds funny to say that,
yeah.
but we were so... they was literally having to leave the bills until we were getting, like, not court orders through, but people literally threatening to come down and remove the stuff that they'd sold to us. And I think at that time there was no one else that was showing an interest in the club. So it was that or not have a club.
I completely agree with that, and I will defend Roland for buying the club at that stage, because and I think I've said it consistently on shows ever since he did buy the club, like you say, he did save us by putting that money in. He saved us. But and once he's got it, it's then his right to do with whatever the hell he wants. But it's something that I'll defend for the rest of my life if I have to. When you buy something like that, why couldn't he have just left it as it was? Because we were doing all right. And you look back at that squad now, like I say, you look at that video of Carlisle today. Okay, that it was Carlisle, wasn't it?
That
was a great day. But you look at some of the home defeats here. Even when we lost some of those games and we were struggling in the Championship, I went home absolutely gutted. Now we lose, I don't even care. I just go home and just think, oh, well, there's another one.
Yeah.
And that heart and soul is what's been taken out. And like I completely agree with you, Sue. The fact that he bought it and saved us from going out of business is obviously a good thing. But since then, he's just this club's just gone from bad to worse. And he won't admit it because he's coming out, like you say, three and a half years on and still saying, but I made the right decisions and the people that don't agree with me are stupid.
Yeah.
And I think as well, I know people are like trying to like rally the FA and stuff, because it's not just us that are in this position. And people being able to buy football clubs now, that I'm not saying that every owner should have an emotional attachment to that football club, but it's like people can come in and buy a football club now without the understanding of what's got them to that point, what the history is, what the connection is with the fans. It's a business, and I get that it is a business, but at the same time, this is our lives. This is something that we've invested in emotionally, financially, in every way possible. It's fans that got us back to the Valley.
I think
in some ways, and I know this is not going to affect a lot, but when Carl Robertson talks about wanting to talk to the fans, I would love to sit down in a room with him and just tell him, because I don't think that message is going to ever get across. That, I mean, when Kerbs was manager, anyone knew that came in was shown round the ground. They were introduced to all the staff. They had to watch a DVD of the history of Charlton Athletic. Now people are coming in, and I think we're lucky that we've got people like Solly and Jacko that will pass on those messages, but it's still going to be slightly disjointed because they weren't around when that was happening.
Yeah, back in the day. Right, John, talking about those those quotes from Roland that surfaced today, says, it's clear that Roland doesn't get it. Openly at war with fans and determined to undermine any positivity. I wish he'd just go now. Also, in fighting amongst the fans yesterday and calling out agendas doesn't help. We need to work together to get our club back. Oliver says, never forget the hashtag top six budget, which I'm sure we never will. Lewis says, KR has absolutely no chance of attempting any unity with the club and the fans when Roland comes out with comments like those ones today. Marion really can't get my head around his strategy if there's one as a businessman. It doesn't make any sense. Roland, time to go, says Roland was also quoted saying, football is less important to me now. We'll get out then. We don't want you here. The owner just continually shows contempt to a loyal fan base. Every time someone opens their mouth, the hole gets dug deeper. That's from Ray Bates. Right, after this this little break, we're going to come back. We want to. Christmas time's coming up. We're going to talk about what Santa Claus Jensen is going to bring you. And then, of course, we've got to look ahead to Saturday's game. Wednesday evening's game, the South London Derby that we lose every time without fail against Millwall at the Den. Back in 30 seconds.
Dennis is fed in, lovely touch, goes round his player, chips across the box, Jackson, yes! What a goal by Johnny Jackson, arriving late in the box, Holmes Dennis with a pinpoint cross, and the skipper's given Charlton the lead.
Charlton Live.
Hello?
From the home of time. This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
Bravo! Incredible.
Charlton Live.
So welcome back to Charlton Live. I'm going to wind Tom and Nath up with that. I don't know, them making sex noises all the time until I get bored of that. Right, just before we talk about the Santa Claus Jensen stuff, I wanted to I saw a tweet today from the Charlton Athletic Community Trust of Solly and Holmes going to the Upbeats Christmas party. We saw during the week the players went off to the hospital and the hospice, as they do every year, to hand out gifts and that and what that sort of thing. Obviously, every club does that, but it doesn't make any difference, the fact that we do it, and it's something really to be proud of, to see the club going out into the community like that, and the players doing their bit like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I used to help out with the hospital visits and the Demelza visit, and I used to love it. And I think what, again, like a lot of people kind of go, oh, well, yeah, it's only a couple of hours out of their day, they're footballers, they should, but you know what? You're seeing children in a really, really bad way.
I'm saying it can't be easy, like, to do either.
And I can remember going to Demelza one year with some of the boys, and they deliberately chose the older lads to go because emotionally, I mean, it's a great place to visit. If anyone is thinking of volunteering or anything, they try and make things as happy and nice as it possibly can be. And we arrived and we got told that a child had just passed away.
Yeah.
And these boys, then they've got to go round and talk to these children like everything's okay. And some of them are dads. And you could see in their faces, they just for that minute put themselves in that parent's position. And I think a lot of people underestimate the emotional strain in going in their visits. And they do such a good job when they're doing it. They'll chat and they're sparky and they'll have a bit of a play and a laugh with the kids and get toys out. But when you come away, you can see just the look of sheer, like,
emotion and emotional draining.
Yeah, completely. Because they can, a lot of them can. The younger lads, I think, have a hard time dealing with it because they've probably not experienced anything like that before. And the older lads, it's like they're looking at him thinking, thank God my child is not in that position of having to spend Christmas in hospital or is not going to live past the age of 12. It's really sobering, but they do us proud. Every year they go, they do us proud. And I think it can't be minimised in terms of how much that kind of affects them. It's all part of like the good PR and everything like that. But actually, that they do enjoy going because it's paying back to the community. And actually, if you can put a smile on a kid's face who's having a really tough time having like cancer treatments, like little kids walking around with their chemo plugged into them, do you know what I mean? And just to have a giggle with their fave, their hero, it's honestly you can't sort of, it's hard to put it into words how sort of inspiring it is.
Yeah, so that's great work by the players and the staff who took part in visits to the hospice and the hospital, and also the guys who went out to the Upbeats Christmas party as well. It was all part of the good community work that the club does. Right, Christmas time's coming. Santa Claus Jensen's got his sack ready. has he got a central midfielder in there? That's what I'm hoping for. I mean, what
he might be able to come out of retirement.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, there was always a rumour that Santa Claus used to smoke when he was playing here.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, like a chimney. So there we go. So, but anyway, right, let's get the Santa Claus music ready.
Have we still got it?
Oh yeah,
good.
All right, Santa Claus, please, Adam. Adam would like Roland to sell.
That'll be a popular one. I can't hear the music.
Can you
get the headphones on?
You got to put the headphones on. Ray Bates says there's only one present I want, and don't worry about wrapping it, although I would like to be there to bid them farewell. Niall Brennan completely unrealistically asked for 3 points on Wednesday. Dave Lockwood said I'd take Roland and his cronies gone as the perfect gift. Kevin Kraut says Roland to sell. Marion said I would echo this. John Charles White said a decent squad, promotion to the Championship, and challenging for promotion to the Premier League. but there isn't. But there is much more chance of seeing flying pigs unless Curbs arrives dressed up as Santa with a red bag full of dosh. Knowing our luck, it would be forgeries. Marion said for him to sell. What else could there be? And Alex Steadman said for a new owner. So you guys, you can have anything you want from Santa Claus's sack. What would you like?
Sorry. It's my filthy mind running. Oh my god!
I mean, so let's talk about maybe transfer targets rather than the obvious that a lot of people have asked for as well. Yeah, and you like Jan back?
Yeah. He's only got a couple of years left, isn't he? So let's just get him quick. Give him another year.
Oh god, it's really hard, isn't it? Can you come back to me?
Yeah, okay. Well, one Stevie G on the Channel Life forum says Santa Claus, please. Please bring me 3 points over Millwall, and I won't ask for anything else this year. If you ask for that one Stevie G, I don't think you'd be able to ask for anything else this millennium.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I'll take it.
It's every 20 years, isn't
it? Yeah. Daniel Farmer says 3 points at Millwall. Tell Tom to bring his running shoes. Merry Xmas to all of you. Thank you, Dan. And Merry Christmas to you. So Santa Claus is about to ride off on his Danish sleigh.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So you run out of time now?
Yeah.
Nothing? Nothing you want from Santa Claus?
Club's perfect, just as it is.
Right, let's have another quick break and we'll come back. It's time to look ahead to Mill. We've got a cracking email in the inbox looking ahead to Mill, so we'll talk about that after this break.
McCovey's line, he's gone for it, you know.
What a goal!
By Armand Katschi.
Oh,
that's almost at the halfway line.
Unbelievable strike.
That is outrageous. Right footed. Well, saw Armand Katschi's line. What a goal.
Charlton Live. From the home of time. Home of time. This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
So welcome back to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Right, on Wednesday evening we look to end 21 years of hurt as we haven't won away to Millwall since 1995. Just on the 5th of December 1995 in the snow. So were you there?
Yes, I was.
I've never seen us beat Millwall. I take the FA Youth Cup penalty win over Millwall as something to grasp onto. That's the only time I've seen us even beat Millwall to anything.
I can remember my mum and her friend Paula going to a pre-season friendly at Millwall when I was
playing. I think we won a pre-season there 4-1 when we were Premier League, but I'm not counting that.
Was there in the snow in my ski suit.
Happy memories. Did you get out alive?
You know what? It was really weird because we went by train and there was a big group of us, and I can remember going with Danny Smith, who runs Channel Life, and we were getting a bit nervous as we were getting to London Bridge, and then walking to the grounds was fine. I think in them days that it wasn't such a a hatred type rivalry, it was more banter. So we'd all have a bit of a crack with each other, like walking down to the ground and then leaving the ground. We were like just quietly happy, and they were just very subdued. So it was a really strange evening.
Mm. So you're one of probably.
These were in the days where we didn't sell out that game. We never used to sell out our end. And especially as it snowed, so we was all like, is the game in doubt anyway? Mm. I can't actually remember how many were there, but it was quite sort of spacious.
So you're one of the very few Charlton fans who's actually ever seen us beat them within the last 50 years or so, but it's true though. We've beaten Millwall something like 11 times in our entire history. And two of those were the first season we played them in 1920 something. So I mean, our record against them is absolutely atrocious. And this is a good email here from Colin. says, hi Louis and gang, says, just a few memories of Charlton versus Millwall matches. I must be in a small minority of Charlton supporters that during my lifetime I've seen every victory against Millwall. What makes that even stranger is that the last time I attended these matches were the two that took place in the season 95-96, the season we have done the double over Millwall. My memories from the last victory away from home was the snow interrupted game on the 5th of December 1995. It was so cold that evening that Big Terry, the very tall policeman, loaned me his police leather gloves that night. One of the friends I was with had to drive back to Crawley that evening, eventually arriving home at 4:30 in the morning due to the M25 being closed down. That is how heavy the snow fell. In total, I have seen Charlton beat Millwall 7 times. The first time, 6th of January 1968, Alan Campbell slotting the ball past Laurie Leslie at the heights end of the valley. Second victory was in the Kent Cup game at the valley. One of the victories was at the Old Den. Also a victory at Upton Park with John Henry scoring. As I've said, I have seen 7 Charlton victories at 4 different grounds in my lifetime. Also 14 draws and 17 defeats. What's the point of this letter? I will not be attending the game on Wednesday night and have not done in 20 years, so I expect my record still to be intact this time next week, i.e. having seen every Charlton victory in my lifetime. So Colin, the whole, I mean, if you're the man who possesses the power like that, you're supposed to take one for the team.
Should
I mean,
coming, Colin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm tempted to stick him in midfield if that's the only way we can get him into the team. I mean, look, we never perform against Millwall. I honestly, the games here, we had the 4-all game. That was the first time I ever saw us play them.
Yeah, me too.
But they had 10 men for the majority of it, and we kept chucking away leads, including one in the last minute. You know, a couple of 0-0 draws at the Den are my best results there, but I've seen some awful games against them. 4-0 defeat,
that was so awful.
2-0 defeat here, 1-0 defeat here. You look forward to this. We're all getting carried away on Friday night at this drink, so we're talking about what we're going to do if and when we beat them. It's not going to happen.
It will. I'm telling you now, we're going to win Wednesday.
You're feeling confident, so
yeah, I am feeling very confident.
And are you going?
I am going to be there.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Because it's one of them, and we say the same about Palace. So each season, I'm not going there this season. I've done it every time. I've always gone. I'm giving it a miss this year. And then it gets closer to the time, like tickets going on sale, and me and my friends always have the same discussion. Yeah, let's not go, because we'll probably lose. And then we go, yeah, but that might be the one that we win. Let's go. So it is literally that same conversation every time. So we're still going, and I'm feeling, I know obviously I missed yesterday's game, but I joked last night that we were saving ourselves for Wednesday.
That's what it looked like.
Well, I hope so, yeah. Saving ourselves for the next 15 games if you yeah, watch it based on that. Tom, you got a ticket for?
I got a ticket. I am looking forward to it. And Wednesday during the day, I'm at work, but I'll be getting excited and ready for it. But I'm still not expecting us to win.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, all the emotion that around the game. There is a game of football to be played. You look at the changes we expect. We make what sort of things would you want to mix up?
Well, I wondered whether, because I think Carl himself said Jacko would play well on Tuesday night. I know maybe his hamstring was tight for the weekend, but you think someone with that kind of relationship with Charlton as a club is likely to play some part on Wednesday, whether he starts or not, I'm not sure. Obviously, you'd then want someone like Solly in there as well, but I doubt he'll be. I don't know if he'll be ready. As I say, the keeper will be an interesting one, because if Rudd's fit, Phillips obviously didn't have his best game at the weekend. I wonder whether a Jose will start as well. I think McGuinness has to, because even though nobody was brilliant yesterday, I think his work ethic is going to be key.
I think they'll struggle with him as well, because of his strength.
Yeah. Addy, I don't know. He wasn't great at the weekend, so if we give him a rest and maybe bring Chickson in on the left. So I think there will be changes. Where they happen and how many, I'm not sure, but I think there will be. And from speaking to Carl on Friday night, it's not a surprise really, but he knows how important this is to the fans, and I'm sure he'll be as desperate for a win as we all are.
We saw that from Andrew Cross' comments, which we heard earlier on in the show, that he knew exactly how long it had been since we won, and as per Terry's question, just the thing, I mean, if these players can be the ones to finally do it, you can become a legend by scoring a winning goal in a derby game. Seb Lewis says, my only time seeing us beat Millwall was that 4-1 friendly, but never in a competitive game. And on Wednesday evening, it's going to be his 900th game in a row, which is incredible and brilliant, but also points out that, therefore, we've played 900 games of football without meeting Millwall.
Yeah, that's not
good. Yeah, John Charles White says, I fear the result will not be good. Does anyone remember the overhead goal that Ray Crawford scored for Charlton against Millwall? So I think I've seen a video of this. It's sort of an overhead on the turn volley that goes into the top corner against
Millwall.
Were
we bowling them?
Almost certainly not, yeah. Well, maybe.
What year?
I don't know. Probably in the 60s, I think.
Oh, yeah.
60s, 70s, yeah. So none of us have seen that. I mean, let's talk about Sebo. We've got 3 minutes left to go. I mean, that is incredible. 900 games.
He's a legend.
You'd always think that something would come up, but he obviously moves heaven and earth, and he's probably gone feeling unwell as well. And
yeah.
Just a love for the club that will not be diminished.
Nice. I don't know. That just, you've got to admire such dedication, haven't you? I mean, I've had a few like people at work and stuff, and they go, God, you and your football. But I'm like, I haven't actually said, because they don't know who Sebo is, but like when you actually got someone that go 900 games in a row, that's just,
I couldn't do it.
It's unreal.
Not with Charlton.
She supported Arsenal or Man United.
I couldn't
or something,
get through 900 games without having a break.
Yeah. Right, this is our last. Tim Ruffle said the game's going to go badly. that's the confidence that we love to see and come to expect from Charlton fans. That's how I feel. Because you just know, no matter how high your hopes are for the Millwall game, it never seems to come to fruition. Is it right? This is our last Sunday show before Christmas. We are back on Thursday evening. You're not around, are you, Tom, unfortunately? So our big match preview for the Boxing Day game, which is against MK Dons, will be on Thursday. But of course, we'll be looking back at the Millwall game there. Me and Nathan and possibly Lewis, I think, is possibly going to be there. We're also going to have a in-the-studio Christmas party.
Nathan will still be gone from the night before.
I'll just be bringing in a few tins of beer with me and some mince pies. So join us on Thursday evening, if you will. So I guess this is your last chance to say Merry Christmas to listeners.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah, have a good one. Be safe, be happy. Laugh and be happy.
Yeah, even if we don't beat Millwall, which...
when we don't beat
Millwall. So don't forget to join us back on Thursday evening for that show. Thank you, Sue, for coming in this evening.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Tom.
Cheers, Louis.
I've been Louis Mendes. This has been Charlton Live. Like I say, don't forget, join us on Thursday evening when we look back at the Addicts' surprise 4-0 victory at the Den. We'll see you then.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.